So we are, as we described before, we're going to have two big plenaries. Yeah, this is the first. This is our first trial. And this is around about what does success start to look like. This afternoon, when we've got the hang of this, we're going to say, and what are we going to do? Which, in brackets, together. Okay, so this is the first session on what does success look like. We have had a number of different approaches into this question, from the forestry, from the urban, from the rural, from the illegal. We've also had that sense that this is a moment for us to grasp it, to make sure that all the work from informal is included in this economic transition. So I'm just really going to open it up for people to start to offer their thoughts on what does success look like from those conversations that we've had. Who wants to go first? And if nobody volunteers, I shall pick on you. There you go. Alfredo, all the way from Chile. Alfredo.
Thank you. Just a brief comment and a question. I was very impressed by Peter Posen's point that the Brazil, in the last 5 years, formalized 5.5 million people. That would count as success, I guess, in our context. And my question is, which was or were the criteria for formalization that were applied in that case, in that policy?
Peter, do you want to take that question?
Quick response to this. It's 5.5 million businesses, not individuals, but they are micro-entrepreneurs, so they're typically one-person, two-person businesses, sometimes families. So it's 5.5 million businesses. It was a long process of discussion that was trying to find out. They have created a new statute of the micro-entrepreneur, which there's a package. It's a voluntary accession to this, so the enterprises apply for this. You have simplified tax assessment and payment. You get access to the social protection system. There's a subsidized access to it. You get access to business development services. Brazil has a very large private sector development, small enterprise development agency, which is present in the entire country. So you get access to their services, and you get access to public markets. So when the government purchases things, you are entitled to bid for these markets as well.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Alfredo. So numbers of people that have been, or numbers of businesses that have been included, is one idea of success. Any other hands? Paul, IID.
We noticed that there's been a slightly binary discussion in the role, comparing the role of the state versus the role of the informal sector. And we wondered what role the formal private sector can have, and whether that could itself, in some cases, have a slightly more progressive role, looking at their own supply chains and how they can encourage their own supply chains to formalize and to become more inclusive and green.
Thank you, Paul. And I remember very vividly George's comments about aggregators and that sense of, that was really an exciting thing about social dimension of on social innovation and entrepreneurship, bringing people together, giving them access. George, response to the private sector or other thoughts on where the value is being created?
Well, if there's an aggregator that can come in between, then that aggregator acts as the link between the formal sector and the informal sector. What I was trying to express in the morning is there's a new breed of youngsters coming into this. These are people who have gone to good universities, love to play around with ICT, and they don't want to get into the private sector and into the big business, whereas they see a new kind of market that is evolving. So does it have to get formalized? I don't think so. But I think they should not be illegal. So they should be, the processes should be legal, and that's where this new kind of entrepreneur can play a role.
Thank you. Oh, good. Somebody volunteering rather than being pressurized. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Matthew Cohen from Christian Aid. One input I'd like to just make is, if you recognize the hybridity of many of the informal sectors, so they create not just economic output and growth and jobs, but they also create value for their communities, they create solidarity amongst, they can enhance social capital, and they can also, as was highlighted, create new models of production and livelihoods that are sustainable. So if you actually count some of those social and economic benefits, social and environmental benefits in addition to economic benefits, and if you actually recognize them through studies and reporting structures, you can then allow them to access new markets in different ways, both in the private sector and the public sector. One of the examples are the social enterprise and solidarity economy statutes that have been created in many countries, and they require that a company has an explicit social aim, which they measure, which they report against, and then that allows that company to enter, for instance, in big companies, there's social responsibility criteria, or in governments, it allows to enter social procurement criteria that have been increasingly created, not just in OECD countries like European procurement directives recently and the UK's Social Value Act, but actually in developing countries like Brazil's procurement from the solidarity economy that is recognized under government programs. So recognize the social value and create access based on social value creation is a good route, because actually they're not just creating jobs, they're creating social capital and other value.
A fabulous point. And I think that one of the biggest discussions in the green economy agenda is, how do we merge, what does success look like for this new green economy? And I'm interested in the sustainable development goals start to define effectively a beyond GDP conversation in country of social capital, environmental capital, and the measurement of success in broader terms, both social and environmental. So in that context, is the informal sector bringing greater social cohesion, social value, and also environmental value? So a really useful avenue of inquiry. Okay. I shall go over to the board and look over, unless there are some more. There we go. Thank you.
Yes, I agree with the point made previously. This conference is called, the question guiding us, what place for the informal economy in green and inclusive growth? We know so much. We know that the informal sector is hugely important for inclusive growth. We've known that for a very long time. We are beginning to understand that it's also important for the green economy. What we do not have is much acknowledgement of this, evidence for this. This is the point that was also made by the previous speakers. And we need to find a quantitative way of expressing this, and there are ways of doing this. But what we equally need to know is how the informal economy connects with the formal economy. And once these connections are brought out, this whole question of legality, receives a lower status. Speaker after speaker have told us, that this is really a very difficult route to take, focusing on the question of legalization and formalization. Once we focus on the connections with the formal economy and with government, local and national, these connections bring us the legitimacy, bring us the connections, bring us the visibility, and give us the points of action and moving forward. So this is the territory where I would like to seek us move around, away from definitions, towards the connections, and focusing on where these connections can be made to work for the informal sector.
Thank you. Connections between the different actors and their value. Hi.
Okay. I'd like to pick up on this issue of connections a little bit. I think that when we talk about inclusion, And when we talk about informality and illegality, it's important to think about the kinds of connections we're talking about. Informality and illegality aren't the same thing. Informality talks about moving legal goods through illegal channels or through non-legal channels. Illegality is really about legal or illegal goods. So illegal goods moving obviously through illegal channels. So when we talk about illegal activities, we're talking about people carrying out illegal goods and services. When we're talking about informal, we're really looking at legal goods and services done outside of appropriate regulation. And then when we talk about connections, when we talk about inclusion, I think we have to be very careful about the kind of inclusion we're talking about. Not all inclusion is beneficial inclusion. One talks about inclusion in the benefits, and there I think Marty has been very strong in emphasizing the importance that inclusion of the informal economy needs to be inclusion in the benefits, inclusion in the decision-making, inclusion in the structures of protection and distribution of income. And then there's also types of inclusion on worse terms, referred to in the literature as adverse incorporation. And in a world of global value chains in which informal operators are included at the bottom of the chain in nodes of poverty, of various other types of inclusive mechanisms, such as labor brokers and various types of social enterprises, I think we have to think very carefully about the terms of inclusion that are going on. Just being included is not necessarily a good thing for informal operators. It's the terms of inclusion we need to focus on.
Thank you.
David Wilson, Imperial College. My field is Western resource management. I've recently edited Global Waste Management Outlook for UNEP. And if you look at the Sustainable Development Goals for Western Resources, they're basically in two categories. The first is to bring waste under control, make sure everyone's got a collection service, and to eliminate open dumping and burning. And the second is to move from the linear to the circular economy. It's reduce, reuse, recycle. In the north, we have taken this stepwise. We started off 150 years ago with an informal recycling system. We discovered public health, waste collection. In the 1970s, we discovered environmental control, and we basically killed off recycling. We have rebuilt it at enormous cost to municipalities, to the public sector, over the last 20 years. If we look in many developing country cities, recycling rates from the informal sector are still 15 to 30%. And if 30% of the waste in a city like Bombay is being collected completely outside of the formal system, which means that the city doesn't have to collect and dispose of the waste properly, that actually represents a saving to the city of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So the informal sector is making a huge contribution. Yes, their working conditions are dirty, but why are they dirty? They're dirty because people are working in mixed waste, because the rich are not separating the waste at source. If waste is separated at source, you immediately give opportunities to clean up recycling working conditions and to improve livelihoods by adding value. You're getting better value for the materials you're selling. So there's a huge opportunity for win-win solutions for cities working with the existing informal sector, a process of integration or inclusion to the advantage of both, to eliminate degrading working practices, to eliminate child labour, and to build on what is already there. So what does success look like? If we're talking about green economy and informal sector, then as Marty said at the beginning, this is an area where we can make progress.
Yeah, no, sure. Thank you, Marty. I was going to come to you at some point.
Just to say thank you very much for that. In Mumbai, the plastic processing and recycling industry generates 0.5% of the GDP of Mumbai, it's estimated. It's the financial capital of... The formal collection system does not divert any plastic to this industry. It is 250,000 waste pickers, a lot of them women, who have to find ways to get the waste, the plastic, along the route where they are denied access. There's no separation at source, they're not allowed at the depots, they have to end up in the landfills. We have no idea how they transport it, but it's generating 0.5% of the GDP of Mumbai.
Thank you, Marty. So some visions emerging of success there. Okay, we offering any more visions over here? Marty's got two visions, that's good. Marty, we've heard a lot, haven't we, about the connections, we've heard a lot about the private sector aggregations. It doesn't seem to be, it's always that sense of, is it the private sector who needs to do more at various levels, the big business, the others, the aggregators, the new social entrepreneurs, but also the role of governments, the roles of states, the roles of informal actors being organized to be involved. I mean, there's the rich playing a stronger role in how they actually behave in order that we create the waste sorted. There seems to be lots of different parts of that vision that is emerging. So some of your thoughts that we could...
I just wanted to reemphasize one that I hear ricocheting around, which is it's a process success indicator, which is that they are organized and they have representation, they have voice. And it's cumbersome, but it's not financially necessarily expensive. But that's so essential in this. And I think we have to have a process indicator of success. And for me, that's it. That nothing for them without them.
Okay, so we actually, when you look at the board, they're starting to fall into sort of categories of, you know, success looking along the lines of livelihoods, the impact of people having better securities, better access to jobs, impacts, livelihoods, improvements. You also see this point about process, having a voice, being represented. What does the economic planning look like if it represents or has the informal sector there? Is it one of those awful stakeholder things where people go, tick, we invited someone along, or are they equal partners in the deciding what the policies are and implementing the policies and living with the policies and improving the policies? And the final ones of what sort of institutional changes are we seeing? I see those three categories emerging. There may be very many others, but that was hopefully a prompt to another vision of the future.
Thanks, Oliver. Anna Blin, IED. Yeah, so that economic planning perhaps should look at investing those resources also in those organizations, those associations who are providing those services to those informal workers or producers. So we need the budget planning in terms of building the capacity to help them reduce these costs of being sustainable and being legal, which are high when you have a smaller unit, but as a group, you can overcome those. So recognize them in your budget planning as well as in your policies.
We definitely need the resources. Okay, so, George has got another vision. Super. Thank you, George.
This is the one on, can we have an indicator that they have to have access to pension? Because if the pension is not visible, it has direct relationships in terms of producing more children, because they see children as an insurance for long-term pension. So can there be an indicator in terms of access to pension, especially in old age?
Yeah, now we're getting practical. Great, thank you.
No, it was just a quick remark. Taking your question at face value about what success looks like, I think we need to ask the question, what are the consequences of essentially not doing anything, just leaving the informal sector as it is? And And we do have a mixed regime in society. There is, the society is formal and informal, and it's been like that for a long time. So I'm wondering whether our success is just that people realize it and accept it and say, ah, okay, we have a mixed regime and that's mainstream policy, or is the success that we get rid of or try to get rid of informality? And I think we need to ask the hard question of why would we think and that formality is better, if it is better. So I think just think what if the objective is livelihoods and improving people's livelihoods, maybe the formality or informality thing is not the key thing to resolve, let's say.
Okay, why?
And a link to your...
I mean, I was going to actually... So my name is Erin Sahano. I work at Oxfam. I was going to make a slightly different observation about rise of inequality in the world and the fact that the observation that increasing amount of the fruits of our global economy go to capital over labour. And I think this is a core trend that's happening around the informal economy and in it as well. And it feels like a lot of the solutions that we were generating are around enterprise models of collective ownership, enterprise models that give greater share of value to people who are in the informal economy, who are working, who are farming, etc. And clearly there are policies that governments can deploy that can directly favour those alternative enterprise models, including credit guarantee schemes that favour access to finance. The Brazil example came up of SME policies as well. So I wanted to sort of throw that challenge out there about being more deliberate about the kind of enterprise models that are in the supply chains or that surround people who are working in the informal economy and looking for policy solutions that favour those outcomes.
Okay, so it is actually lunchtime now, but I think that, Marty, you started us on this journey, and you should have the final word of why.
Just two thoughts, I guess. many more. I think one takeaway I'm hearing, and certainly the forestry sector examples, what do we mean by formalization? If it's just a procedural thing that you acquire a certificate, you know, that's not going to change anything for anyone, either on the formal or the informal side. So, and just does a certificate make you legal somehow? And, you know, raising that it's not illegality, it's just operating in ways that have to get around the system because the system is biased. So sort of unpacking formalization or just getting rid of it altogether and saying a certificate doesn't do it. Thank you very much. The other is related to the private sector, and this is a point that came up in our discussion, is that the private sector is it's bipolar about the informal, the formal private sector, because we hear all this thing about unfair competition, all of that. And yet, at the same time, they're so essential. The linkages are everywhere we look between the formal and the informal, right? And it is unfavorable insertion in most of the ways. So I think we have to unpack the political economy of the rhetoric, right? Right? Because unleash their potential, unfair competition. I mean, the whole language and discourse around it is also covering something else up, right? That we really have to keep an eye on the political economy of what's going on in every context. And big business is using the small businesses and hiring workers informally, and yet at the same time casting this cloud of stigmatizing it. And mainstream economists are also in that. I mean, I'm at Harvard with mainstream economists. Informal economy is a problem. It's a drag. It's illegal. It's criminal. Why are you doing this, right? It's unproductive, all of that. So we have to just keep poking our, you know, myth busting, our friend was saying. We have to keep pushing on that.
Thank you. I think I won't try to comment on that one. We just go for lunch. And we have had our first attempt at plenary. We will have another one this afternoon, which is what are we going to do together. So enjoy your lunch. Thank our speakers. And let's crack on with lunch. Thank you very much. Back in an hour.